Oh, say can see.
If you're an American and you're professing to be a Christian, well, of course, as American citizens, what we want is accountable leadership. Why don't we throw in a constitution so they know what's in there? Get engaged in the political process.
Honest.
You, my friend, are part of the problem and not the solution.
Compassionate.
The church needs to rise.
Monica Matthews Show. Good morning and happy Friday to you. It is the final episode of Burnout. Hopefully you guys are feeling, maybe understood, informed, covered. There's a word that most women can relate to. Hopeful. How about that? Hopefully, over the past 4 weeks or 3 weeks, we have been able to instill, some wow. So other people really do feel that way, or wow, that's what that is. Wow, that's that brick wall that I'm getting ready to smash into called burnout. So for the past 3 weeks, I've had special guests with me, Chaplain Retired Major Chris Cairns, and today we're going to get into not only mitigation, but just what is recovery from burnout look like. Okay. We talked about mitigation. If you've missed the past 3 weeks, please go back and listen to those. If you're just catching us, it's okay. Listen to this broadcast, but absolutely bless yourself and go back and listen to the previous three episodes. They are chock full of wisdom, knowledge. Hey, we got you. We feel you. Been there, going through it like now. And I am personally on the recovery side of this brick wall. If you missed it, I've been basically off of the air for the past many months because I couldn't find anything in particular that my heart was just on fire about blessing my audience with. And most people are used to me, talking about geopolitics and faith and policy and all this madness going on in the country. And my soul was just dwindling into just a shrivel of dried up crumbs. And I really had nothing left to offer anyone. So I took a 3 week sabbatical from Twitter because I felt my soul shrinking on that platform. And I'm being very serious. Some of you think I'm being hyperbolic and I'm not. I just didn't recognize myself, especially as a Christian, as someone who professes righteousness, peace, and joy as the way. I was not living literally any of that. So at that point, you have to look at yourself and go, where have I gotten off track? What is it? What is that arm in my life that needs to be cut off? What is that eyeball that needs to be plucked out, that Jesus talks about? Because you may not end up in like some fiery furnace for eternity as a preserved Christian who believes in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, but you can darn sure live through an enormous amount of hell on this side of eternity, being stressed out, wrecking your relationships, wrecking your career, wrecking your health, right? And so that's not abundant living. And so when you wake up and you realize, all right, something's got to go. What is it that is driving me to this madness? And so I decided that my socials had to go. And it is legitimately one of the best decisions I've made in a very long time. I'm back on Twitter, but you'll notice I'm not really back on Twitter. I'm there maybe one tweet, two tweets a day, if that. And I don't really focus on it at all. I highly recommend deleting it from your phone if you find yourself addicted. There's no shame in that. Just get it off your phone at least. So you have to make the effort to go to your desktop or your laptop. And you'll find that it's just not worth the effort. And whatever little, backbiting, vicious, malicious retort you have to some ridiculousness that you see on Twitter, it will subside. If you'll just give yourself the moment to breathe before you go directly to your phone to engage in that type of behavior, that behavior will lead you directly to burnout. It just will. You may be happy with every other area of your life and your kids, your wife, your family, your career. Everything's great. Your church, you're just super, happy as a bug. But when it comes to your frustration level and just kind of this latent, it's not even latent to be honest with you with most people on socials, but you'll look around and go, okay, something's not right here. I'm not myself. I'm tired. I'm agitated. I'm quick. You know, I'm quick on the draw, right? You become quick draw McGraw, and I'm very quick-witted as it is, so that's really easy for me. That's the time to just stop and take a breath. And whatever needs to go, cut it off. And I'm telling you, your body will begin to respond. So I'm in that recovery phase. I can't wait to talk to Chris in just a moment, because I want to talk about, he's got some great ideas, you know, to carry you over into the recovery gardens. but the temptation is, once you get a little bit of your cup full, that you're just going to like tuck tail and, you know, run down the field, right? Like you're excited, you're ready to go, your body's getting restored and your endorphins are good and your oxytocin is off the charts and all these neurotransmitters that have been dead, dormant, smashed because of burnout. Now your body's beginning to revive again and you're like, hey, I can do this and let's go do that and blah, blah, blah. And if you're not conscientious about what got you to burnout to begin with, it's very easy to fall back. Speaking of taking care of your health, as many of you know, I recently joined the folks over at mygotodoc.com, mygotodoc.com. You can use my code Monica Loves Health. Dr. Hyder, Saeed Hyder, great, great guy. I just retweeted something of his the other day where he's talking about helping many people who are dealing with cancer. Okay. Among many other ailments, and particularly coming out of folks who believe that they have been vaccine injured. Some of you don't subscribe to that, and that's fine, but you might have other health challenges, or maybe you want to make sure that your disaster preparedness antibiotics kit is in place in the event of supply chain hiccups. And as we know, I don't think that bridge is probably going to be the last supply chain hiccup that we see in Baltimore. I think you can count on other supply chain hiccups in the future. And wouldn't it just be nice to have a 6-week backup supply of your regularly prescribed medications and safe off-label COVID protocols for prevention and treatment, including DPACs and antibiotics, all things of that nature, right there in your own home for you and your family. So you're not freaked out. You're not DMing me in the middle of the next epidemic going, where do we get this ivermectin? Where do we get this hydroxychloroquine? Where do we get, you know, a basic antibiotic, Monica? And I'm happy to turn you on to people who can help you, but you may as well go right on over to mygotodoc.com and utilize Monica Loves Health and get your 10% off to go ahead and get those things stockpiled, right? Not out of fear. Out of preparedness. Also, no fear around our finances, but one thing that can certainly give you an ulcer, keep you up at night, is worrying about your 401ks. So congrats, hats off to my audience members who are stewarding their finances by investing in and transferring much of their 401ks and or savings in Roth IRAs over to MonicaProtectsWithGold.com. Some of you have asked about physical gold. They can answer all those questions for you as well. You know, we're not dealing in paper certificates where you kind of hope that there will be some gold left in the event of you wanting to actually, you know, obtain and take custody of your physical gold. But those guys at MonicaProtectsWithGold.com at GoldCo can answer all of those questions. Again, MonicaProtectsWithGold.com. You can move either all of your 401k or a portion over there, but they've got all of those details. And congrats to those of you who have alerted me to just how happy you are with GoldCo and that you made the adult wise decision to protect your assets. So without further ado, what's happening, Mr. Chris Cairns? Welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Good to be back.
So, you heard all that. As you can tell, I'm like, brrr. So, and yes, we know now that you know me a little bit better, my energy is really hard to match in the morning. Okay. Cause I'm like, let's get it. Let's get up and move it once the sun is up. And you're kind of like, oh, Monica. All right. But the only reason why you see me this way is because I've taken the time to recover a certain amount of physical, emotional, mental territory from this burnout season of my life. So you're going to educate me and my audience on how, what recovery looks like and how we can actually maintain it. So hit it.
Well, I used to have all the energy in the world, but I, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and be able to match your energy. I am a go, go, go guy. But because of that, because I've pushed through so many stop signs in my life, as a professional, in my vocation, which is, you know, serving others constantly, I am a case in point why you just can't, it's not sustainable to live a life like this. Mm-hmm. And the reason I've become a self-described expert in occupational burnout is because I keep doing it to myself.
Right.
And so the thing is, burnout is not something lazy people can achieve because they find the path of least resistance around work. In the Army, what we saw is that it was our high achievers, which we talked a little bit about in the one of the previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. And those high achievers keep pushing through the stop signs because people keep scraping other people's jobs onto their plate because they're competent and capable. And if you have a performance-based identity like we do, you know, we're just like, pile it on. Yeah, I can do that. And then we run out of inner resources to cope, and our coping mechanisms stop working. And people, this is where you really need to be concerned about people who seem to be behaving very differently than their normal, chirpy, you know, social butterfly self. So in my particular case, I've pushed through so many stop signs, most of them physical injuries. Like I was even pushing through physical injuries. I stayed on active duty for 6 years after almost dying of a pulmonary embolism, and having thoracic surgery and having four ankle surgeries. And it wasn't until my back was literally broken that the medical community finally got to me and said, hey, we need to medically retire you from the Army. So, you know, those physical injuries that I have acquired are mostly due to pushing through the previous injury, mm-hmm. coming back too quickly.
Right.
And that, you know, when you think about that physical pain that I'm constantly in doesn't go away. It's chronic pain. And yes, I believe in healing, pray for healing, have faith that healing happens. And when it doesn't, you know, the Lord is up to something in that as well. He redeems all things. And so each day I go through a cycle of getting pain exhausted. And if I keep pushing like I'm used to moving, then what happens to me is that I start running out. I start going through the cycle of burnout daily and during the week. So I have some extra reasons why I have to pay careful attention to how I structure a day so that I'm giving my first fruits to whatever the Lord can really use me in. And I'm giving my leftovers to, you know, the stuff that doesn't matter as much, the bureaucratic, the, mm-hmm. you know, calling the phone company and staying on hold forever. You know, those things are also draining,
mm-hmm.
Because they're not as exciting. But when the exciting things, the stuff that you like doing, stops being attractive to you. Like I'm a social kind of guy. I like to go out. I never do now, or I rarely do, unless I have people come in from out of town and, you know, I'm trying to show them the beautiful places that we've lived in, beautiful towns. But that's me. In a nutshell, is just hard charging, mm-hmm. go, 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 and crash.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're really talking about today, is that crash. You know, what do you do when nothing's working anymore? People are starting to notice that you're You're drinking one too many. You're reaching for things that are unhealthy. You're making bad decisions. And you certainly feel a much different way when you're in the deep stages of burnout. You feel like you don't want to get up and go to work. Like you really just have a hard time scraping yourself into the car and going to work. And it's not just like the normal, you hate your job and you don't want to go. It's like you literally don't want to move. You just want to go fetal, shut out the world. And that may, some manner of shutting out the world for a while may help, in especially in your case where, you know, your job and your work is constantly engaging with other people through Twitter, other social media, you know, that you can't sustain a lifestyle that requires more than one single human being's resources.
Right.
It's not sustainable.
Right. I agree. I we're going to go over, you know, something that we kind of touched on in the last episode was something that I ask my audience to do at the top of every year when all Christians are like fasting the Daniel fast, right? Even though we do not ever fast, really, Isaiah 58. So I'm like, okay, you guys put away the Daniel fast for 21 days and go over to Isaiah 58 and your lives will actually spring back to life. But something that I encourage people to do is to write out their own family and personal mission statement, family mission statement, values. Basically, I call it the family constitution. And my listeners who have done it love it. They're very grateful for it because they have a barometer, you know, by which they can measure, okay, where are we, right? Because when you're just kind of aimless as a family and the stresses are piling up, at least you have some semblance of something in writing where you know these are our values. This is, are we on track? Are we not? Because once you get off track, that too can lead to the burnout. Also, you're talking about strategic goals for your life. What is your why? Because it governs everything. Basically, how to design the life you prefer to be living. Okay. And I also want to touch on, because this is with people who burn out habitually, which is usually the case, if we're being honest, it's almost like dealing with an addict. Because addictions actually do come to the surface, believe it or not, like you just stated, you know, whether you're drinking too much, eating too much, sleeping too much, whatever your, behavioral or, you know, mental, emotional response is to burning out, it is going to manifest, right? And that can adversely begin to affect, your kids, your spouses, your loved ones, partners, whatever. And so I'd like to also speak to those who may be watching this cycle in their loved one and how, you know, because here's what I hear from people who don't really operate on this level or have this struggle. It's kind of a, well, just pull yourself up. Quit being this way, right?
That's right.
Just grow up, right? Just get it together. What's wrong with you? If you loved us, you would get out of the bed. If you gave a damn about me, you'd quit drinking, right? And so it's like, yeah, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. There's a little bit more to it. And so what is the love language that, you know, a spouse or partner, even if you see your kids going through it, as opposed to becoming critical because of whatever challenges it poses for you, right, as the partner or the spouse, how can you come alongside that person to really help carry that cross so that, you know, in a very meaningful and merciful way, so that you're not codependent with that person, so you're not feeding that madness, but you are legitimately coming alongside to help carry the cross. Because I honestly think that's how I end up seeing these videos that are god awful. And I saw one just yesterday. It broke my heart. And this woman said, this was the last time I saw my husband. It was a suicide video about teenagers, husbands, wives, people who appeared happy, and their grandfathers who looked kind of okay in their videos. And then they never came home or they found them dead, you know? And it's like, wow, when we look back at the video of them, you see the emptiness in their eyes. You see that the joy was gone. You see that they couldn't even blow out their own birthday candles because they just didn't give a damn. You know, I mean, it's stuff like that where this isn't just, hey, everybody, welcome to the burnout, episodic. We're going to make life, get out your yoga mats and pray to the Ra and whatever and stretch your legs behind your ears and it's all going to be good. That's not what this is. This is like very real stuff. And we do have a very real enemy that we tend to partner with at times. And he loves to come along and drive and take us out of rest, out of our sabbatical state of being. And then he just crushes you and can crush you through people who you would hope and think and who have taken vows to actually come alongside you and undergird you. So I really want you to hit on that too before we go today. I think that's important.
Well, it's one of the reasons I was just so irritated, because I showed up in the Army having burned myself out a few times in ministry and ready to tackle a new kind of ministry. You know, being an Army chaplain is one of the best things I've ever done. And the way that we have decided what to do next in life has always been opening our hands and saying, Lord, what do you want us to do next? Put something in our hands that matters as it pertains to the advance of the kingdom. And so, but what was so irritating is I showed up, looked around like my first day in the Army. And I was like, sir, I know what this is. I know why you've got zombie people. I know why you've got issues with the families of these soldiers, because you're sending them home a carcass and they're coming back to work with that sort of they're getting beat up right and left punch, work and life balance. And the only thing the Army was saying to soldiers was, like you were saying, it's like work-life balance, get it. Get some. Right. And you're like, you're an 18-year-old kid and you have no idea any of that means.
Sure.
And then you get into deep stage burnout repeatedly. You get trapped in the Army because it's the only thing you know how to do. And you get some senior NCOs and some lieutenants colonel who, you know, just are soulless people by the time, you know. And you see this in medicine among nurses, you see this among public school teachers. You know, the service industry is a really tough gig. But what was really irritating to me was that the number one precursor, the number one pre-existing state of soldiers to suicide was occupational burnout. And it was just irritating that nobody would listen to me because they just want to jump in at the last minute and stop the last decision to, you know, to choose a permanent solution to temporary problems.
Right.
And to recognize the symptoms of right before suicide. And I'm like, hey, let's aim upstream a little bit and take care of people before it becomes this drastic a problem. And so, you know, you and I were talking offline about the difficulty that some people have with designing a life or having an intentional way of imposing margins on a day. But this is what I'm saying is you have to create margins for soul refreshment. It is required. It is, you know, human beings are not built for 7 day, 24/7 work.
Right.
The Lord took a day off when he created the entire universe. And he's telling us not just to take a day off, but to live a Sabbath rest lifestyle. I mean, that's one of the things Jesus said, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will refresh you. And what's so interesting about that is like, they're still in the first century agrarian culture. You know, people, you don't work, you don't eat. You know, there's so much that you have to do as, you know, if there's any farmers listening, they're just like, oh, you city dwellers, you know, think you work hard. And, you know, we just get stressed out over paperwork crossing from one side of the desk to another. But, you know, farmers wake with the dawn, but they also go to sleep, you know, when it's time to go to sleep. And we stay up you know, watching whatever on our devices. And so we're, as a society, we're deepening the problem with how we do entertainment in the margins. So instead of refreshing our souls, we're depleting ourselves even further. And nobody's teaching on this. Nobody's aware of this. Mm-hmm. You know, the best the Mayo Clinic can do is tell you what the symptoms are. And then they're like, get a hobby. It's just like, it's not about just getting a hobby. It's right. not about having something in the margin of your life left over by work. It's about having the right things in the margins of your life left over by work. Right. And when you get into deep stage burnout, it's recovery. You know, just like when I snapped my Achilles, I had to have surgery. I couldn't walk for 6 months. And wow. of course, 2 weeks shy of 6 months is when I went off to Chaplain Basic, which was dumb, but I needed the money because I'd already quit my job and mm-hmm. my entrance into the Army is delayed. There's all kinds of reasons why we end up in the place that we're in. And what we need is somebody to come alongside and not only teach, but assist.
Right.
Not in a codependent relationship, but with intentional love, which has a tough side sure. to it. Sure. When you're saving a drowning victim, they teach you this when I was a plebe at West Point. We called swim class drown proofing. But if you're swimming out to a drowning victim, the first thing they teach you is not to swim up close to them and to tread water with a foot between you, stick a foot up between you mm-hmm. and the drowning victim, because they're panicking. And if they grapple onto you, they'll take you down with them.
Sure.
And so this kind of coming alongside, our friends and family, you know, sometimes requires a little bit of training, you know. There's a lot of great articles surfacing finally about the burnout in wider society and not just the medical profession, because we don't want exhausted surgeons working on us. Obviously, we don't want exhausted pilots keeping our aircraft in the air, you know, so but we overwork those people to such an extent that we need them all the time. And they have to say, look, you know, it's way too dangerous mm-hmm. to not do something about the hours that these professionals are keeping. Now it's time to start paying attention to ourselves in the wider society. Are we burning ourselves out to the point where we're rupturing our relationship, our key relationships, and then people end up isolated to the point where
right.
they become predator or prey? And, you know, whether you're predator or prey in isolation, as you say, that's the enemy of God. That is his shtick, is to rupture your relationship between you and God, you and others, and you and true identity mm-hmm. as the beloved of God. So organizing your family constitution around that fundamental truth that, hey, God made us for his purposes, which are love. You know, the enemy of God is a taskmaster. He is the slave master. He is the one who, you know, continues to guilt us with the should. Mm-hmm. I should be doing this. I should be doing that. And we have these racing thoughts of all the things we should be doing. And it's exhausting just to
think about it, just to be in your own yeah. head. Yeah.
Just to go through the list of all mm-hmm. the shoulds. Right. And one of my spiritual directors used to say, don't should yourself today.
Right. Right.
And to just give yourself space to see what God might bring. If you're at peace and rest, mm-hmm. he's likely going to bring somebody to you who needs the shade tree of your ecosystem.
Right.
But if Christians are unhealthy and Christians think, you know, the God from whose fingertips the universe fell, as Brennan Manning puts it, who owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, like, he does not need us mm-hmm. for anything. Mm-hmm. He delights to use us But if we're collapsing into a heap, he'll find somebody else to do the work. He's not going to leave himself without a witness. But he delights to use us and for us to be used for his purposes and not used in a commodification kind of way. That's the enemy of God. That's bad companies not taking care of their people. That's the army I observed in so many pockets of ill health. Mm-hmm. This is to be used in that romantic dance, you know, to participate with what the King of Kings and Lord of Lords is up to in the lives of others. But we can't participate in that if our cup is not only cracked, because sure, there's a break, as my favorite singer-songwriter David Wilcox puts it, there's a break in the cup that holds love inside us all. So we have to go back to the source,
right,
and be refreshed. So those are some of the concepts behind, you know, what you talk about when you're talking about family constitution. What I talk about when I'm talking about designing a life you'd prefer to be living, you have to get some of those fundamentals down. Like, why? The big question, why am I in this job and not that job? Why mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. do I live in this town and not that town? We need something to govern those decisions. Basic, fundamental, mission, values, vision, like we talked about, so that when you're making decisions about what to do daily, weekly, monthly, annually, and bucket list, you're creating space in the margins. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, what I find is I'm looking at my sheet of paper with daily, weekly, monthly, annual, and bucket list columns for soul refreshment space. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we create that space in the margins? So I like it because on the paper, there's just blank space under daily, weekly, monthly, annual, and bucket list. My wife, she's a list maker, and she evaluates her day based on how many things she ticks off the list. Mm-hmm. Some of us are like that. I have a list, and I'm like, if I have three really good conversations that matter, mm-hmm. You know, people coming into my office interrupting the bureaucratic work of an army chaplain, but I can set that aside and have a great conversation that mattered in somebody's life. You know, that's how I evaluate how, right, whether it's been a good day or not.
Right.
And that can be done in healthy or unhealthy ways with either sort of operating style. But the columns on the page give space for me to be a creative and to write in all these things that I want to be doing every day, every week. And they're exciting things. It's a vision with a column for bucket list to pull stuff off into your annual vacation every 3 to 5 years. That's kind of like a sabbatical if you don't get one. But I like the space on the page. She likes the lines because she gets to hold me accountable to what I've said I'm going to do, which mm-hmm. is, you know, like in my monthly column, I have time alone with each kid, time away with my wife, time away for my soul, refreshment. And so if you're in this place of deep stage burnout, you have got to impose God's will through your will, because, you know, if you delight yourself in his ways, he gives you the desires of your heart, but only if you delight yourself in his ways. Acknowledge him in all your ways, know him, know his ways in all your ways. Mm-hmm. And then you can get up, move out, draw fire. And whether you turn to the right or to the left, there will be a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. Some of us think of the will of God like a blueprint for life. And mm-hmm. if we miss that train, that's we've right. missed the boat entirely.
I would say 80% of Christians live that way. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a father who delights in us and he thinks we're neat. He made us. Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't want us to be running around trying to catch, you know, trains with a blueprint for life that's, mm-hmm. you know, He wants us to be romanced by his creation and this this opportunity to participate mm-hmm. in his creative work in the world. And when we get to feel that sense of God using us in somebody else's life, that's the best kind of addiction. It's so wonderful to be a person of peace, bringing that peace into other people's lives. But I would say, you know, think of yourself as a parent. I, as a parent, did not, you know, I was not driven to drive my kids in any particular direction. Like, you've got to be a banker mm-hmm, or you've got to mm-hmm. be a doctor. You know, some families are like that. You've got to take over the family business someday. My way of looking at my children is this is a gift that God has given to himself and to the world for me to steward and to unwrap. Mm-hmm. So I am a co-unwrapper of this gift with them until they discover their identity. And I build boundaries for that so that they're safe from harm. But mm-hmm. Eventually I have to, you know, I'm not trying to create risk-averse kids. Like, sure. Can you imagine in the American Revolution if that generation of parents had raised risk-averse children?
Right.
That's all the people on the side of the British, by the way. You know, we can't be the kind of missionary, the daring missionaries that we need around the world if we're raising a risk-averse generation. Sure. That being said, I want to protect them so that they have time to discover what's truest about them in Christ. What's their identity, operating style, you know, and they're all so wonderfully and differently made uniquely, mm-hmm. but image bearing the same infinite God whom we worship and serve. And so I think it's a lot more like our Father just delights in us. He's like, I don't care whether you become a dancer or a lawyer. Like, you know, mm-hmm. My delight is in you, just like me and my kids. And Jesus talks to fathers and he's like, you know, y'all are evil and you give good gifts to your children. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Imagine your Father in heaven who has lavished creation on you, lavished time and space and history, lavished your body, soul, spirit, lavished the blood of his own only son to liberate you from the slavery, bond slavery to sin, so that you can be free in his creation forever. Mm-hmm. You know, that God, the Father, delights in you. And you can rest in that knowledge. That's what he says. Come to me and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke because my yoke is light. That burden is light.
Right.
But the world's burden is just insane. The pace is insane. You know, I went to grad school in Washington, D.C., and that place is like somebody stepped on an anthill. Like mm-hmm. Everybody's scurrying around trying to climb the power ladder. And man, we needed the John Yates pastor at the Falls Church telling everybody how to get off that ride. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we desperately needed pastors to be living Sabbath lifestyles so that they could teach us how to live Sabbath lifestyles. Right. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
How to live a Sabbath lifestyle. What are we talking about? Because these are concepts, but it may not be clear how we're defining and connoting the words we're using.
Well, one of the ways that a friend of mine does that, and I don't know that he was necessarily living, quote, a Sabbath lifestyle from a Christian perspective, but he's a very successful business owner. You know, about just drove himself into the ground, for years and then realized that it did cost him. It cost him a lot, cost him his marriage, cost him a business partner or two. And yeah. Eventually he got to the place where he said, you know what? And I really admire him for this because I've adopted it in my own life. He does not make a single business decision past 2 p.m. Won't do it, no matter who calls, no matter what it is, what the emergency is, because what he recognized was that his capacity to make sound decisions that were not predicated upon rushing, stress, what everyone else wanted to happen, happened before 2 p.m. And so he was at his highest capacity in the morning, And he had certain things that he would, you know, address every day in the morning that pertained to business. He didn't shut up shop at 2 o'clock, but he just refused to make a decision about anything to do with business past 2 p.m. And so I began to adopt that. And not only from as an entrepreneur from that business perspective, but in my personal life as well, where if someone calls me and says, you know, I got to talk to you right now, like it's you know, I'm like, okay, is it, you know, you have to discern what the heck's really going on. But generally speaking, hey, I need you to make a decision on this right now. I'm like, well, your emergency is not mine,
right?
You know, and so I think it requires, I think you have to begin with love. You have to begin with self-love, and like you keep talking about identity, and that we are created by love himself, right? And so he loves us, and one of the reasons why we're led into sabbatical is to refresh, because that's part of love. I think we have an antichrist problem in the earth, which we've had since Jesus was here, which is an antichrist spirit, which is anti-love, because Jesus was the incarnate love of God. So when we don't love ourselves, we don't see the value. It's hard to place a value on things like your time, your space, boundaries. Boundaries are very important. And it's just become this bastardized term where it's just really kind of, you know, woo-woo, I call it, hoobly-goobly stuff, and everything's psychobabble. But it's like, no. Boundaries are very important to your agency. I'll use that interesting sociological term, but it is, it's your own personal sovereignty. Your time is part of that. Your energy is part of that. And I would suggest you even have to set those things up within a marriage, within a relationship, particularly with children. You have to have your own boundaries. Yes, you're one person, right? We all know you come together, you're one, that's great. But you're still uniquely individual. And some people blur those lines and they just want to bum rush, you know, your time, your decisions, your choices. And they're kind of like, you know, personal drill sergeants. So there's one way that I wrote down that I wanted to share. If you're a business leader, if you're an entrepreneur, even if you're running a Fortune 500, those guys have some pretty strict time. We call it time management, boundaries, but it really is, to me, it's preservation of your psychological energy, your emotional energy, because those guys make decisions that affect, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people, including supply chains. So, you know, I think consider a time when that's it. I'm not making decisions past this. I'll get back with you tomorrow. I hired an organizer in my life a few years ago, and she came in and she observed me for a moment to see what, because it felt like my life was totally out of control, particularly my time. And I was writing my book at the time, and she assisted me with, like you say, creating those guardrails, you know, if you will, around your time. But what she did was she said, listen, your emails are important every day, okay? Because that was what was important to me. Do you need to check your emails every day? Some of you don't. You don't run a business. You're just hearing from Aunt Sally, you know, on occasion. So maybe you check your emails every other day, or you make an appointment to check them once a week, right? But as a business person and running a ministry, I needed to check my emails daily. But what was happening is, because it's on my phone, I have access to it all the time. And so when I'm sitting at a red light, when I'm bored in a conversation on the phone, when I'm bored in the kitchen listening to someone, I'm on my phone scrolling, and then boom, I'm automatically taken over into the crisis, the need, the want, the whatever in my email. So she was like, no, set up, you know, from 5:30 in the morning, because I'm an early riser, to six, you're going to not only read your emails, maybe you respond, or maybe you come back to them and respond later in the morning, when you've had your caffeine and you've gone to exercise and you can make better decisions. So the time management was really interesting, because it was really about organizing how I work efficiently, so that I built in rest all throughout the day. And part of it, I think too, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but I think part of it is people get to burnout because they feel like their life is out of control.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The phrase that I always used in the Army when I was teaching on the subject of mitigating against occupational burnout is in this life design, intentional life design, I would say you have to impose your will on the chaos at the margins of your life left over by work. And sometimes we have to impose, as you were just saying, some of those boundaries. I know people who create a margin on Monday mornings by not checking emails until after noon, you know, to care for their people, and, you know, go around to every foxhole and see how people are doing. That, you know, creating one time margin for the people in your company to care for them, to see how they're doing, see how their weekend was, you know, and then they know that you know them outside of work. You're not just commodifying them to use them up, discard them, and get a shiny new them.
Right.
And this problem is corporate. It's in our federal bureaucracy. You know, the enemy of God loves to use the gift to distract us from the gift. And so we're more connected than we've ever been. Yay.
Right.
And we're more isolated as a result, because you get to a place of burnout and you just don't want to talk to anybody anymore. So you end up isolated because of the connectivity. Like, you know, you get notifications, you get emails on your phone. Now, you know, Steve Jobs, what a great idea, microcomputer in your pocket.
Right.
And you've probably seen that meme go by where it's like, what would you tell somebody from the 19th century if they were here? And you'd say, I carry a device in my pocket that has access to all human knowledge ever. And I use it to look at pictures of cats and get into arguments with strangers.
Right.
But that pull to answer every notification, because, you know, if we are an increasingly diagnosable ADHD society, we're creating crops of ADHD kids. Now, maybe it's even hereditary. And it's not that it wasn't diagnosable before. There were people who were constituted that way. But with the advent of TV, you know, with the advent of every technological advance, you know what I mean? As Christians, we know what's going on. There is a war on, a spiritual war. There's the lover of our souls, and there's the one who wants to destroy us because he hates everything God loves. And so to care for ourselves, to love ourselves, is to stop. It's kind of like that scene in the movie Tombstone, where they're pinned down, Wyatt Earp and friends and Doc Holliday are pinned down in a crossfire, and Wyatt Earp, played by Kurt Russell, just gets up and says no, and just starts, you know, standing up in the middle of the crossfire and taking care of business. And some of us are so pinned down by the shoulds and the have tos,
right,
and we don't have any space. You know, where, like that Song of Solomon verse, where do I go in the heat of the day, when flocks don't rest? I'm getting the shoo-shoo beat out of me, and I don't know how to find rest. And Jesus says, come to me. I've been waiting for you to come to me. And all this stuff you think you're accomplishing for me, the quality of your work is diminishing, and you're not a blessing to the people around you by jumping in the middle and solving every problem and micromanaging. You know, that happens because of burnout. You start feeling out of control, and so your movement becomes chaotic. And instead of helping people, you're smashing them. You're crushing them. You're beating them over the head. They don't know what you've delegated to them and what authority you've given them. They don't know what their tasks and deadlines are. It's just disordered.
Right.
And imposing this order on our lives is not, it seems paradoxical, because it seems like we're going to have less space if we say, you know, on the first Tuesday of every month, I'm not going into work if I work from home, and I'm just going to read and write poetry. Well, that's the kind of thing that gets crowded out first when we feel overwhelmed by the shoulds and the have-tos. I don't have time to you know, linger in my library and pull a book off the shelf and, you know, read a few lines from C.S. Lewis's Joyful Christian, which I'm looking at right now, which would probably be really good for me. And then there's another one on my shelf called Water from a Deep Well. And I'm like dying of thirst. Speaking of thirst,
right.
You know, we have the resources because God has put the resources within our reach.
Well, I think something else that happens too, though, Chris, is listen, I'm a huge proponent of, well, I'm also single. Okay. So it's easy for me to say this, but even as a single person, people will try to put, constraints on your time, on how you choose. Like if you do take a Tuesday off, and one of the best blessings I've had in my life is my former producer taught me, you know, hey, you need to take a couple of days because I was on the air constantly. Entertaining people is extremely taxing. Educating people, informing them, empowering them, all those things are wonderful. But it also, when you're on, especially live radio, it's a thing, right? And it is depleting. And so I would just be like, go, 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 go. I found myself just excited and putting the show together and calling guests and doing this and that, and producing a lot of different things throughout the week. And he's like, no. You need to build in at least 2 days for yourself. So where are they? I don't see you doing that. So he instilled that in me. But what happens is people who don't operate on that level, or who they appear to have boundaries, but maybe they have a full-time job, a 9-to-5, right? And then they see others who are entrepreneurs, or maybe you're just in a season where you're jobless or you're kind of seemingly directionless and maybe you are burnout. I think sometimes people can get very jealous. People get pissed because you seem to be taking the long, slow stroll road, smelling the tulips and the roses along the way and sitting down and reading a book. And for me, it's like, I have these moments that are just mine. I don't share them with people. I don't tell people every single thing. It's kind of like my smoking habit used to be. Smoking was my thing. That was my little secret. No one knew I did it. It was mine. It was the one thing in my life I had that I could control. At least I felt that way when my husband was dying. And so no one knew I was smoking, but that was my little steal away moments of, this is me and my cigarette. We're having this love affair. That's it. And y'all can judge me later, but I quit like 15 years ago or longer. So, but you know, and so that's why I don't judge smokers, because I get it. And everyone smokes for different reasons. But for me, there are things in my life where it's just none of your business that I take an hour out of a Tuesday, or I take an entire Tuesday to go to the park, which I will do. I'll go to the Botanical Gardens, one of my favorite places in Atlanta, because it's beautiful. And beauty reminds me of our Father. And beauty reminds me to slow down and rest. And admiring things that I didn't create remind me that there's such a much bigger picture than me, and I get to play in it like a kid. And so I think, too, you know, sometimes you are dealing with people who will shame you because they can't find, and they won't impose those types of boundaries on themselves and for their own life. And so they'll just shame you right out of, you know, the schedule that you've created, or those little peaceful moments for yourself, because they don't understand it. I've dated people like that, and and obviously I'm still single. but I don't, you know, guys who want to go fishing, you know, hanging out with some new friends recently, I finally realized that, you know, my husband wasn't trying to get away from me as a newlywed. He just really enjoyed, he was working his butt off in manufacturing. He was climbing that corporate ladder, and his way out to just enjoy himself was a golf game on Saturday. And, but as a young wife, you start thinking, well, why don't you want to hang out with me? Why don't you want to do something with me? Right. And for years I carried a torch about that until I started playing golf, quite well, actually, but I did not understand that that was his, right.
Gauntlet throne.
Right.
There will be golf.
Okay. That's fine. Bring it.
We'll see how it goes.
And so, but as a mature woman now, and some women are still nuts about what their husbands do with their recreational time, as we, or downtime. What is it? It's recreation. Oh, entertainment. Yes. Yeah, so the recreational time is very important versus the entertainment.
Amusement.
That's right. Yeah. And so now, I have a respect for that, because I too can check out on a golf course or fly fishing or flying an airplane where I can't think about anything else other than my hand-eye coordination and whether or not I'm about to lose $20 on a hole. But that being said, I think there can be, you know, some challenges there, and you just kind of have to have mercy for people. I'm not suggesting keeping secrets from your loved one, so please hear me clearly. I'm not suggesting that, but I am suggesting that, you know, there are some things, particularly if you're just sitting and reading a book, you're still handling your business, but that's just how you choose, you know, to plug into the Sabbath, you know, mothership. Then,
well, each person refreshes themselves
differently,
him or herself right. differently.
Correct.
And, you know, in our 20s, you know, I thought there was something wrong with Elizabeth because she didn't want to ever hang out with people. I was like, are you antisocial? Turns out she's an introvert.
Right.
And if she's been spending time around people all week long for work,
that's
the
right.
last thing she wants to be around
is people.
When she comes home from being with teenagers all day as a high school American literature professor or instructor, mm-hmm. You know, she'll snap at me, and it's funny because she snaps at me like I'm a, you know, unruly teenager, and I'm like, dang, you know. Mm-hmm. But like the last thing she wants is, you know, crowds of people, and that's what I wanted to do with my time. So, you know, as you mature in your relationships with God, with others, and discovering your own identity. You start learning those things that refresh you. For Elizabeth, it's books. Like you can't even imagine. Like you look at my library and you're like, dang, you've read some things. Her library may be digital and less, you know, she wants me to get rid of my books that are on all my shelves. And I'm like, no, I want more. But she goes through books like crazy, like you just wouldn't. What is it? Goodreads.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She goes through books like crazy, and you know when you see somebody on social media saying, "I need a good beach book to read," mm-hmm. Elizabeth is always jumping on there and saying this, that, and the other. And other people are like, you know, well, there's these 10 books. Elizabeth's read them all. I'm like, how do you find the time? You are one of the busiest bees I know. But that's her thing.
Right.
That's what rejuvenates her. She goes out on her back deck, wind in the trees, birds chirping, and she reads.
Mm-hmm.
So learning what it is for you that refreshes your soul. What do you need every day? This isn't just time management. This
sure.
isn't just goal setting. It's a comprehensive life design so that you can recover that time you need to be rejuvenated and refreshed. So for me as a minister, Christian minister, I have no Christian who's literate has any excuse not to be in the scriptures, but those of us who are presumed to be teachers of others, there is no excuse for not being in the scriptures every day. Mm-hmm. Not to browbeat yourself if something comes up and you miss your, you know, quiet time, you know, God's not going to be tick marking up there and the heavenlies because you missed a day. But it's food. You have to feed yourself. You have to feed your soul. You have to keep the engine going with those 2 days off that you were talking about that your producer mm-hmm. gave you.
Mm-hmm.
And having a boss like that who recognizes family time and yeah. you're going to have better employees. You know, the lazy people are going to be lazy people and you kind of have to be a taskmaster just to get them to do their jobs. But if you're not taking care of your hard chargers, they're carrying the weight of your lazy people.
That's right.
And it's unsustainable unless you care for them.
So what's some advice for spouses who may not be dealing with burnout at all, but they recognize everything we've talked about for the past 4 weeks in their loved one. So what is a way that people can help when you see this happening?
Well, for, like I said, for me, I need to recognize what Elizabeth needs on her day off, days off. You know, I need to, I've never in churchiness ministry that I've been in, I've never had expectations that she's going to plow in and teach a Sunday school. She teaches all week. She mm-hmm. needs a break.
Sure.
And so, you know, there's a lot of pressure on pastors' wives to, you know, like sure. run everything. Same with commanders' wives in the Army. You know, they're supposed to be the head of the family readiness groups, and they're supposed to be, you know, hosting tea parties for all the ladies. But if they themselves are professionals, you know, that's part of the problem is we've got too much work for too few people in most of our lives, but mm-hmm. in the society of your own household, especially if you have little kids, you know, where do you go when you have three little kids climbing all over you every day and your husband comes home exhausted and the last thing he needs is for you to just dump the kids on him. But the last thing you need is to never have a break. And so it's absolutely fundamental to a healthy marriage to have conversations about how we can cooperate, mm-hmm. Co-own. You know, I said one time, to a friend, no, I'm sorry, I can't go to that. I got to babysit the kids. And they responded, they're your kids. That's called parenting.
Right. That's right.
And so how giving Elizabeth the day off might look like, hey, I think we talked about this before, but mm-hmm. hey, Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, the kids are on me. I'll keep them alive. They'll be covered in Pop-Tarts and, you know, they won't necessarily have had the healthiest day. It might look like pizza.
Sure. But what if someone sees their loved one, you know, picking up habits that are just either unattractive or they're unhealthy or they're selfish, you know, and you know why? It's because they're burnt out. So how do you come alongside, you know, and I'm sure you've ministered to people around this. So what is your typical advice to someone who, you know,
well, now
is watching the train wreck?
We've gone from preaching to meddling because Elizabeth is the one who's been watching the train wreck. You know, she's been watching me burn myself out repeatedly. And I do think it's kind of like TBIs, like it gets worse and worse and worse, harder and harder to recover. Mm-hmm. It takes more to get out of the depths of the pit that you've dug for yourself.
Okay.
You know, so she'll come alongside and, you know, what I don't respond to is the finger waggy, judgy whistleblower.
Sure, sure.
And so, you know, there's wives and husbands out there that need to learn how to communicate.
Yes.
You know, instead of your glass is so terribly half empty, full of dirty water, you know?
I have them come through me. I have them come through my ministry doors. Monica, he, blah, 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 or Monica, she, blah, 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 you know, and it's just an accusation fest and it can be hard to get people to recover, but go ahead.
But like your producer, who was a good boss, mm-hmm. he came alongside and he would say, Monica, you've got a glass and it's a beautiful glass.
Right.
And it's only half full. You could fill this to overflowing. And so it's just a different way of communicating the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Monica, you have to feed your soul. And this isn't feeding your soul. How can I help you, you know, get to the things that you need to refresh your soul.
So it's not self-focused. It's still other focused. So it's not you doing this is causing this to happen to me. It's you doing this is causing this to happen to you. And I care about you and I want you to be okay.
Yeah. And for it to be love, you know, like we've talked about, it's not 50-50. It's right. 100%, 100% in the opposite direction. Everybody wins.
Right.
And so self-offering as gift, as a healthy gift to another is, it's the greatest thing that, that romance, that worldly romance, that attraction, like has been given to us as a gift. Now mm-hmm. it's abused all the time, but it's because our Heavenly Father is wanting us to know Him and like Him. The worst is to see people know Him and hate Him. because of something that the enemy did. And the enemy's always trying to pin the tail of the donkey on, pin his own tail on God and then blame God and get us all to blame God for the things that he has done, or the things that he's done to entice us to do. Mm-hmm. And so we end up in a mess of our own making. And it's just time to wake up. You know, let, even if the person in your life isn't communicating effectively, it's, you know, today is day one. You know, sit down, write out some things that aren't happening that give you joy, that have been crowded out by your life, and just list them and build them into the structure of your life, build them into the rhythms of your life. And you'll find that that life is the one you'd prefer to be living.
You know, I want to close. We're coming to a close here, and but I want to share something. I'm so glad you just said that. I have totally forgotten to share this. Okay, and this is the perfect time. Okay, I think I've shared this with you though in personal conversations. I know I've shared it with my friends, but and I've shared it in ministry and on the air. But I'll repeat it for our newcomers. There have been, here's another barometer, you guys, okay? Here's another way of really deciding, discerning whether or not you are, you know, we have this little saying, living your best life now, okay? And that's wonderful, but honestly, one way you can measure it is just by looking around, just kind of be an observer of your life and go, this is not my life. I have had very memorable moments. I mean, moments. I mean, I can remember them like I'm still standing in them. I can smell the aromas that were in the air, the cologne, the heat, the, you know, the temperatures of outdoor, all of it. I'm there. All right. And there were very pivotal moments in my life where suddenly I stopped and went, this is not my life. And the last time that I was living someone else's life, and the last time that happened, I was dating this guy who I was learning to fly, and he's a pilot, and we were friends from high school. So it just all kind of made sense. We're like, oh yeah, you know, we hang out, talk about flight. We have a good time. He's kind of cute, blah, blah. And I somehow end up at this Fun and Sun down in Florida. For those of you who are pilots and you know Fun and Sun, you know, it is the largest fly-in like in history. And it's annual, and it's, you know, it's hotter than two hells. And if you've got an RV, everybody's hooked up, you know, hopefully you're hooked up to, you know, some power and some AC and some water, right? So he had this awesome fifth wheel, and it was like a dude's trip, which I love hanging out with the dudes. And so, and they were shocked that I wanted to go, because this is like, you know, scratching stuff the dudes do, and it's sweaty and it's gross and people are drinking and it's what. And I was like, no, it'll be great. I'll be around a bunch of pilots. I can go do my own thing, take some courses. It'll be wonderful. And, next thing I know, I am, sorry about that sound, you guys. I'm 4 levels of sweat deep, okay, because he was too cheap to pay to hook us up to any kind of electricity or running water. So I'm showering with cockroaches the size of my Pomeranian, which is fine, whatever, I can hang. But I was still like, huh, this isn't what was promised before we got here, okay? And these dudes, some of them have served together, so they're all away from their wives. So this is like, okay, Monica, if you decided to hang out with us, you're one of us. Okay. So it is what it is. So just suck it up, buttercup. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But there's a moment where he turned into like a monster when he drank. And so he was turning into a monster, and I'm standing there in all of my glory. I'm sweating. I am pissed. I am not happy. And I look out, I bust open the door of this fifth wheel like a country. I come from a butcher holler, whatever. I look like a mad woman. Okay. And I am not happy. And the guys are drunker than drunk. Beer cans are all over the ground. They're all just awful. They're just being boys, grown men being boys. And I looked at him and I looked at them, and it occurred to me like a lightning bolt. This is not my life. I am not, this is not my life. I am living someone else's life. This is not what I'm destined for. And so, and I just kind of fell into that relationship because it was convenient. It made sense at the time. I know this is ministering to someone out there right now. And I ended up in a situationship. And for a minute, it was fun until it wasn't. And the minute I said it out loud, this is not my life, I knew I was getting out. And the second my feet hit Atlanta, Georgia, I was out, and we broke it off and I went on about my business. But I think that too can be, and I've had that happen several times, Chris, in my life where I'm like, this isn't, it's usually involving other people where I go, or a job where I'm being abused or I'm being used. I'm being tormented by coworkers, and people will tell you, well, that's probably just where God wants you to minister to everybody. And I'm like, okay, y'all can hang out with that fake holy roller crap if you want, but this stuff is causing me, you know, I'm about to head for a stroke. I'm out of here. So I've had those moments where I'm like, this is not my life. I'm not living my life. And you know it. You know it in your soul. You know when you're not living the life that was meant for you. And so I think those are the moments where you just go, okay, I got to pivot. And whatever it costs me, whatever I got to cut off, whatever I got to lose in order to gain, I've got to do it. Because this is not the life that I know I'm destined for. I know that. So hopefully that inspires someone out there. But closing thoughts on your part, sir.
Well, as M. Craig Barnes said, Christianity is fundamentally losing the life of our dreams to receive the life that Jesus died to give us. It's this paradox that, you know, his will is what's best for us. And that's why he wants us in his will, but it's not, you know, some sort of, train we miss. It is the shape of our life. It is the way, you know, Christianity in early days was called the way, and, the Hebrew living is belief that causes action. It's not just like the Greek gnosis, intellectual assent to ideas. Mm-hmm. It is the way that you're living. And if the way that you are living isn't even pleasing to you because you've been enticed by, you know, the flattery of the enemy.
That's right.
And fed breadcrumbs in a trail. And then you end up in that place that you're describing, mm-hmm. where you just have to say, like Kurt Russell in Tombstone, you have to stand up under the crossfire and just say no. And when we talk about, you know, the diabolical, your best life now, like, you know, avoiding all risk, right. avoiding all loss, avoiding all pain, pain avoidance is like, you know, just to get to numbness, not to get to 100% and overflowing, not to get to an abundant life, but right. just to get numb so that you don't feel pain avoidance. Is huge in our society.
Sure.
We don't want to walk through the gate of pain to get to the hard truths, the hard decisions that need to be made to achieve this abundant life under the yoke of Christ, where we don't carry the burdens he does. That's what a yoke is. You've got the stronger, bigger ox carrying most of the load, and you're growing into co-equal partnership and participation. Although we're never co-equal with the Lord himself, but he's maturing us so that we can be a bride in a romance, priests forever who worship and serve continually for eternity in the new creation and resurrected bodies. It's going to be fun. It's supposed to be fun. It would have been fun. It can be fun. Asterisk footnote, there will be pain. There will be hardship. There will be persecution. So this, your best life now, like we've mentioned before, is like if Paul had that gospel, he would have retired with a veranda at Ephesus overlooking the Mediterranean. you know, being willing to go down in passion for the kingdom, passion not as described as follow your bliss. That's right. The, your,
best life now lie.
Sure.
But passion as described as that for which you're willing to suffer to see to fruition, just like Christ was willing to suffer to see us receive the abundant life that he is offering. And that is an interior life where the fruit of the Spirit comes out of us when we're squeezed under pressure. If what we've been putting in is the Word of God, the sweet nothings of our Lord romancing us in a dance that goes on into eternity, and the Spirit within, you know, where we've invested time with the Spirit in rest, resting in the Lord, communing with God in prayer, not just chatting at him about Aunt Stacy's pinky toe hangnail.
Right.
You know, our long list of petitions, but adoration and the thanksgiving and pray. How, you know, I've seen people build into the design of their life. Okay, I'm going to spend the first 5 minutes of my day thanking God for everything he's blessed me with. And just that one little key piece, it's like the map key to the rest of the day. Like, we have so much to be thankful for, even those of us who have known pain and sickness and loss, death of loved ones, and we've walked through all that. We still have so much to be thankful for, the beauty, the love, the opportunities that that are emerging before us, because God loves us so dearly that he wants to give good gifts to his children. And a lot of those good gifts are like wisdom, not a Lamborghini. But we confuse what God's good gifts are because we don't value the right things. So part of this designing your life that that God would prefer you to be living, and what God prefers you would really prefer, part of it is learning to value the right things.
Right.
Relationships, investing in relationships. Like, if you are an investor into other people, then when you're standing about to cross the farthest shore and you look over your shoulder, you will always, again, I'm ripping off David Wilcox. He's got a song called "You Will Always Have What You Give to Love."
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But you got to have a time margin for it.
That is true. You know, when I was in ministry full time and my family thought I was crazy, probably still do for the most part. But when I was in ministry full time and I made the decision to leave everything behind and go into that, and moved. Like, I just packed up and left and moved out to the boonies and did ministry. And it was great. But what the Lord showed me was that with every life, with every life that was revived, in every aha moment of his love for people, and every healing, and every joy restored, marriage restored, relationships restored to God, to themselves, to their families, he showed me where those folks were my reward. They are my heavenly rewards, where I will, they're my crowns. They're jewels in my crown. And it was such a, it helped me. It really did away with all of the accusations that were coming my way about being crazy, going into full-time ministry, from people around me who just didn't understand it. And I thought, you know what? Thank you, Father. And I've never forgotten that. And well, I do have seasons where I forget, but it was such a beautiful reminder that he values us. For God loved the world. He gave his only begotten son. So we are what and who he values. It was evidenced in the cross. And so, yes, just edify, not your statement needs qualification, but to really, you know, agree with you, in the strongest sense that, when he reminded me, and that was something I was losing with my engagement on socials, because I could no longer see people behind the accounts. It was just, It was stupid. It was idiotic. It was trash. It was garbage. It was, liberals. It was the lefters. It was the leftists. It was the trannies. It was, you know, whatever my, just my, you know, sociological, malicious convictions became. It was no longer, hey, this is the way, right? And to love people and offer them a lamp, unto their feet called the word. It became a sociological just disaster zone for me personally. And once I recognized that, I was like, oh my gosh, I have completely devalued my righteousness, his righteousness, which he now gives to me, and his peace, which he now gives to me, and his joy, which he now gives to me. I didn't value them to the extent that I didn't even realize they were gone until they were gone. And well, that was my, they're still there, but you know what I'm saying? I had to
We take the bait.
Yes.
You know, the bait gets thrown out there and we start getting enticed away from our first.
That's love. Another great book. The Bait of Satan. Great book, which is offense, by the way, for those of you who don't know, it's to be offended. That is the greatest bait of Satan, is to be offended. Cause once you're offended, you can be taken anywhere off path. So,
well, and you justify your behavior, yes, after being offended. The whole victim culture that your friend, is it Adam Coleman?
Yes, Adam B. Coleman.
That he talks about, that's ruining people's lives.
That's right.
And we've just got a culture full of the entitlement mentality that comes from taking constant offense. And I had a friend call me up. I don't know if he was high or drunk, but he was a college buddy. And he just started cursing me through DMs. And I don't even know what's going on. I haven't talked to him in a while. He needed money, in the past. And I, was very generous with him. And I try to, it's really hard not to respond to cursing with cursing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why it's easy to do that. It's easy, as Jesus says, to love those who love you, but to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. That's divine. That's introducing divine commodities into the human economy of relationships, which only comes from one source. And that is the Spirit of the living God.
Right.
And he who has the Spirit has life. He who doesn't have the Spirit doesn't have life. And so you can't give what you're not restoring, right, in your soul. And that's what, this burnout mitigation design is about, is to restore, refresh, recharge.
Mm-hmm.
And to this time I'm starting day one today with my new rule of life. And this time, we always say, New Year's resolution.
Right. Yeah.
We get one day into lifting weights and we're like, yeah, I'm out.
Right.
I was listening to Jim Gaffigan, the comedian, last night. And you can go on YouTube and look up Jim Gaffigan talking about exercising or working out. And he's like, I just don't want to.
Right.
I don't do it because I just don't want to. But we have to learn what will feed ourselves, give ourselves our own trail of breadcrumbs.
Sure.
And if it's happening to somebody you love, you have to give them a trail of breadcrumbs that they can follow out of the situation that they're in.
Right.
It's a complex problem. One resource I did want to offer to people out there is to just Google the burnout, or DuckDuckGo is a better idea. But look up the burnout inventory, which is a PDF that is just readily available, and you can fill it out and kind of see where you are. And if you are in deep stages of doubt, don't expect that you can get yourself out by yourself. It's just not going to happen. You have to ask for help. You have to, as we say in the Army, you have to come up on the net and say, hey, I'm in a world of hurt. You know, I'm under the crossfire of the enemy. I need a teammate. I need somebody to pull me out. I need somebody to take me to the gym.
Right.
I need somebody to eat healthy with me. Mm-hmm. I need somebody to have fun that doesn't involve drinking with me. I need to, you know, whatever it is that you need help with, say so. And when you tell somebody you love that they're hurting themselves, say it in love, in a tone of love. That's might be able to hear you if it's not finger waggy, judgy, whistle blowing.
Right.
That's all I have to say about that.
Excellent. okay. Where can people find you?
At Christopheros, with an F, the word Christ, OFEROS on the Twitter X. Pretty new to that platform. Been a Facebook guy. And most places I'm just chriscairns.com or facebook.com/chriscairns.
Cool.
LinkedIn.com/in/ R. Chris Cairns, because my first name is Robert. Now there's somebody out there stealing my identity as we speak. but to the listeners, hey, I love y'all. And if there's a way I can be of service, let me know. I have friends in every town, resources, licensed counselor, spiritual director types. So if you don't have somebody in your life who can help, then just come up on the net and send me or Monica a direct message, because it's not worth allowing this, which is a solvable problem, to take your life.
Amen to that.
Let somebody help you.
No permanent decisions in temporary situations. Exactly.
Yeah, don't do it.
That's right. Well, Chaplain, Major Retired Chris Cairns, this has been fun. Okay, I've had a blast doing this particular episodic, and I think you and I are talking about moving forward with some other topics. So we're going to leave this up to you guys. What is it that you would like to hear from us moving forward? Yes, I'm still doing my own podcast. However, we're going to be incorporating Chris into the Thirst Ministries, Thirst Entertainment Network ecosystem, and we look forward to publishing more material. So what is it that you guys want to talk about? What do you want to learn about? What do you want to know? I'm personally not super pumped about addressing geopolitics, and I'll tell you why. Because if your soul is not intact, none of that matters. None of it, literally. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, none of it matters. I've been in politics and the entertainment industry for a combined of, this is kind of scary, 40 plus years. And nothing changes within politics, nothing. And geopolitically, many things have already been outlined that are happening, that are going to happen. It doesn't mean that we check out. It doesn't mean that we don't get involved civically in our communities and as much as we can. But I like to keep first things first. And so I'm very German. I like things in order. And when our foundation is cracked, nothing else matters. Nothing. If you're not first, your families aren't first. Nothing matters. So I'm very interested in covering things that are very relationally oriented, whether that's how you relate to your government. Fine. We can get into that. Chris and I'm sure can kick that ball around. I think another, good place to educate people. Chris, you and I talked about this the other day. There's a lot of confusion in the church right now about who is Israel? Is America the new Israel? Are the Jews the synagogue of Satan? I mean, these are things that I'm hearing from my colleagues and mutuals that are quite honestly astounding, and they're filthy. I mean, I'm hearing some of the filthiest things about our brothers and sisters in the faith, even though they may not be born again in Christ Without them, we don't have Christ. So let's just get that straight. So we could talk about things of that nature as well, and really keep our hearts intact and our minds with regard to Israel. What does all of that mean? Not allowing your hearts to be troubled during these times, and really having, you know, just a very strong constitution about what you believe, predicated upon actual truth. So I'm happy talking about those things with Chris. I know he is too. So you can email me at Monica. Just hit me up on my actual email, which is monicamatthews@protonmail.com. Monica Matthews with two T's at protonmail.com. If that's too much to remember, just go to my website, monicamatthews.com, and hit me on the contact me, and I will get it. It'll come straight to me as well. Monica@monicamatthews.com, and let us know, what is it that you would like to learn about or be empowered with, or, you know, other guests that, we can bring on. So yeah, would love your input on that, you guys. And, thanks for hanging in there with us for the past 4 weeks. It's been great to get your feedback. Again, reach out to Chris for ministerial needs if you'd like, or any further, support regarding burnout. I'm here for you as well. If you would rather speak to a chick, that works too. But we can also work as a team. So, keep that in mind. But yeah, I love you guys too. Chris, thank you for being here with us and taking time out of your ministerial schedule and all of that, you know, religious bureaucracy that goes on within churches. Thanks for being here with us at, the Monica Matthew Show.
We can do, a whole year of podcasts about what's wrong with the church.
Exactly.
But we
totally could. Well, you could for sure. I can hit it from a different angle, but you've definitely been in the trenches of bureaucracy, and God bless you. But you know, you're also in the military, so you know bureaucracy.
It's been a real pleasure. I do think that Satan is a bureaucrat, and when those of us who don't make the cut, you know, hell is a real place. But I think maybe it's like being in a line with a bunch of different windows, and you get up to the front of the line after waiting for an eternity, and they tell you that's the wrong department, and then you get passed around for eternity.
So basically hell is like the DMV. Got it.
And there's all these hidden
or the VA. Fees. Yeah.
Yeah. You're fighting to get the hidden fees removed. Satan is in charge of like the airline industry, the telephone companies.
Actually, he's the prince of the air, so that makes sense. But listen,
that's right.
So, bada bing, bada boom. But yeah, that is so good. Also, oh man, you just reminded me of something with that. Oh, I always tell people, they're like, especially the church that's like, we're just waiting for Jesus to come back and get us, and the rapture is going to happen any day. And John Hagee said it was going to happen 6 years ago and seven blood moons ago, and here we are. And who cares? Because hashtag God wins, right? So they don't get involved civically. Which is half the reason of why we are where we are. And they just sit around and bitch about everything, or they holy roller everything to death where they're not engaged in anything. And so God doesn't care about politics. So here's my saying. Okay. God absolutely cares about politics. And I'll tell you why, because the first politician was Satan and Lucifer, and he garnered a third of the vote. Okay. So people have stolen that from me. That's fine. Whatever they say, you know, what is it that not mimicking is the highest form of flattery, something along those lines, but plagiarizing more or less. But it's true. It is absolutely true. He was the first politician. And, so I agree with you. Satan is a bureaucrat.
Well, that could be a whole podcast, because totally. The root word of politics is polis, which means city. And it's supposed to work, you know, it's the coming together of organic systems so that the body, the corpus, which is the root word of corporate. So there's nothing inherently evil about coming together to share gifts. But right. When it turns into this hellacious pyramid scam with the devil himself as the cherry on top, because that's where he wants to be.
Right.
It's devastating. We gotta whistle blow on that.
Oh, and we're also trying to like think of our name. So if you guys have a name for a podcast, we're down with that too. We thought about bourbon and Bibles. We thought about, you know, I don't know, you're the theologian. I'm definitely not the theologian, but I, you know, I'm just a Bible girl. So I think I represent the people who are like, what the hell did he just say? And you represent the people who are like, yes, in the fourth century of the, you know, whomever's fiefdom, you're the historian in this friendship. So, yeah, we're having fun with it.
It's fun to say the word eschatological, apocalyptic eschatology. There, I said it. I said it. That's right. I said it.
Go look that up.
Go look that up and impress your friends.
Exactly. Right. Or just go to Twitter and follow certain accounts who think that they corner the market on all those conversations. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun. It won't always be so serious, or maybe it will, you know, good entertainment, good quality. Yeah, I'll say entertainment, is something of a symphony, is what my radio coach used to tell me. And it's true. You have your highs, you have your lows, you have your arcs. And I'm not a, you know, I didn't go to college for mass communications or for journalism. And I didn't have to. Turns out, you know, God blessed me with the ability to communicate. And I had amazing teachers who loved me, respected me, and they saw what God placed in me, and they just helped me refine it. And so, you know, conversations, especially in podcasts, I think should be, should kind of take you on a journey, you know, an emotional, in terms of how you vocalize things, you know, just the synergy between people is a lot like listening to music live, you know, I think all of that, matters. So those are the things that we'll be incorporating as we move forward. So again, Chris, thank you for being here with us. You are great. And, you know, yeah, thanks guys. So thank you guys for being with us. You know where to find me, MonicaMatthews.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Monica On Air Talk. Also, don't forget, go to mydoc.com, doc.com, and use Monica Loves Health for 10% off. Also, protect your assets at MonicaProtectsWithGold.com. Be good to your neighbor, beginning in your own mirror. And remember, if you're an American, act like one.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.